This week, Virginians will learn whether trends in community health data will allow for the gradual reopening of businesses to begin later this week. This is the Charlottesville Quarantine Report for May 11th, 2020, and this edition is entirely free of Governor Northam. Instead, we drop in on the most recent town hall hosted by the Thomas Jefferson Health District.
It's been a long 2 months, as we all can relate to that.
We'll also feature a long piece about how one Charlottesville high school student has used this time for some personal growth.
I was kind of thinking about like my personal journey as a person and trying to figure out what I'm going to do during quarantine.
I'm Sean Tubbs, the creator of the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Thanks for taking the time to listen today. Let's start with some updates. There have now been 25,070 cases of COVID-19 in Virginia, based on 167,758 tests. The death toll has risen to 850, with 823 of those confirmed and another 27 considered probable. In the Thomas Jefferson Health District, there have been 351 cases and 13 fatalities. Of those deaths, 31% are Black or African American, and 61.5% are white. Nearly 100 people have applied for the position of contact tracer for the Thomas Jefferson Health District. Applications have closed for the positions, up to 20 or so, that will be used to help track further cases as we move through the various phases of reopening businesses. Health District spokeswoman Catherine Goodman said the agency is grateful that so many people want to serve the community. The Blue Ridge Country Store on Charlottesville's downtown mall has announced that it will reopen on Monday, May 18th. On a Facebook post, owner Daniel Priebus said he feels they can do so safely. That means, quote, sanitizer everywhere, Santa wipes, gloves if you desire, sneeze guards, other stuff. If you know Dan, that's kind of how he sounds. Our first segment of the program today takes a quick summary of a recent town hall meeting held by the Thomas Jefferson Health District. There's going to be a long segment in a few minutes about testing, something everybody has questions about. This week, the Virginia Department of Health is launching a data portal with testing numbers for the entire state. Here's Catherine Goodman, communications manager for the health district.
They will actually be broken down by zip code, so you can type in where you live to see how many folks in your area and your zip code have been tested, and we'll be sure to share all of that on our social media pages as well.
Goodman is the host of the town hall, and with her in the studio on Friday, May 8th, was Ryan McKay. McKay is the incident commander for the Thomas Jefferson Health District.
Certainly appreciate all of the physical distancing, the face coverings, and the acts that the community has done to slow the spread of COVID.
Sometime this week, Governor Northam will announce if Virginia will move forward with phase one of easing restrictions, allowing for a gradual opening of businesses.
What this means is some of the restrictions that have been placed on non-essential businesses like restaurants, breweries, gyms, fitness facilities, faith-based activities will ease a bit. There's going to be specific information on the governor's website. And what we want to do today is sort of highlight how we're preparing and how we're going to provide guidance to the community.
McKay said that's going to mean explanations about how contact tracing and testing will work in the community. I've heard and seen many questions and concerns about testing and whether there are enough. Let's hear from McKay.
To expand testing, a couple of things are happening. One, we're working to hire and expand the number of testers that we have on hand at the health district. We're building a team who will go out into the community and conduct community site testing. Basically, this will enhance our ability to reach specific communities throughout our health district to open up access to testing. We've already worked on this plan. We've already implemented it to an extent. We held our first community testing event in Fluvanna County back in April. Today, we held one in Louisa County, and then working with various partners, others have happened, for example, in Southwoods and Albemarle County. In the near future, we'll have testing events in Nelson County, Greene County, at Yancey Community Center in southern Albemarle County, and we'll also start hitting locations within Charlottesville and Albemarle and throughout the rural areas of our health district where access has been a problem, where disparities have been historically problematic for groups of people in our health district.
In the event of a positive test, McKay said case investigation and contact tracing begin to find out who else the individual might have come into contact with and where.
This is an interview process that's conducted by a case investigator to ask the individual who tested positive a series of questions to determine how long they've had symptoms, to identify locations they went to, people they had interactions with. And the idea is that we identify those individuals and give them guidance on how to best isolate so that they're getting better and protecting others as well. It also helps us to identify individuals who may have been in contact with that person, who may have been at risk. We contact those individuals, we talk about the interactions they had, and we give them guidance on quarantining for 14 days. And the idea is that they are monitoring their symptoms during that 14-day period.
McKay said reopening the economy is only being considered because of all the work people have done to slow the spread. For those of you staying at home, you've been part of that, helping to do that. Here's Charlottesville Fire Chief Andrew Baxter.
We have been going through a very structured planning process for well over the last month to try and visualize and plan for what each of these phases will mean for city government. We've had a team of folks that have been meeting with every department and working through all of those details, trying to capture what efficiencies have been gained. And I think we're all incredibly aware now of the power of telecommuting and video conferencing in a way that we weren't 8 or 10 weeks ago. Also changes that we're going to need to make to physical spaces, to workspaces within city facilities, and beginning to plan for that now and do the engineering and the budgeting for that.
One of the ways to get through this time is to keep marking time. It's been 2 months now. Here's University of Virginia Police Chief Tim Longo.
It really has been a very long 2 months, certainly not just for us, but for this entire nation. The impact of COVID-19 on the university community is really no different than it's been for every other person, family, church, business, or virtually any corporate enterprise that's been impacted by this terrible disease. It's certainly tested the capacity of every inch of our physical infrastructure here at the university, and frankly, every person who helps keep this place operational each and every day.
Chief Longo served as the police chief in Charlottesville from 2001 to 2016 and became UVA's chief of police earlier this year. He had a few observations to share.
I've really watched the community show up, take ownership, take personal responsibility, help each other, and do our best to sustain as a community. Certainly our healthcare workers, both here at the University of Virginia and at Martha Jefferson Sentara, and those throughout the community and private doctor's offices have shined beyond anything we've ever seen before. I think that's going to require a good mix of critical thinking as it relates to data, but also experience. And frankly, a spirit, I think, of creativity, of how we use our assets and begin to do the work across the university environment. I know President Ryan, his executive leadership team, and a host of really smart and innovative people across both the academic and medical landscape of the university are working hard to prepare for the fall of 2020. As I sit here today, I can't tell you precisely what that will look like. It's a work in progress. I've seen some really civic-minded people and groups kind of come together to support the most vulnerable in our community, whether it be housing for the homeless, food sustainability, increased testing, as the health department has been so gracious and in concert with our hospital systems, supporting our assisted living and nursing facilities who were impacted by COVID, charitable support for those who have lost their jobs, and even assistance to our regional jail in ways of testing and increased telemedicine. So there's been a lot of work done, but there is a lot of work to be done as we go into this phase of recovery. So, and we're privileged here at the university to be part of that, and to be part of this great community.
No decision has been made yet about whether the University of Virginia will open in the fall. A committee is looking at the issue. President Jim Ryan talked about this on yesterday's Face the Nation on CBS.
So we are in the midst of trying to figure out how we can have as many students back on grounds in the fall and in classrooms, and to do that safely. And we're working night and day to figure out exactly how to do that and we'll make an announcement about the fall in mid-June.
But let's get back to more on testing. Let's hear this extended clip between Catherine Goodman and Ryan McKay of the Thomas Jefferson Health District. This part is important.
So I'd like to ask Ryan McKay to explain to us a little bit more about, I know the health department has a lot of plans. I work at the health department. I hear about it every day. You know, we're expanding our testing. What about specific neighborhoods or folks who are at risk, like long-term care facilities and African Americans in the community?
Thank you, Catherine. To start with, on the long-term care side, we have, working with VDH and the University of Virginia, have done what's called point prevalence surveys within long-term care facilities. And what that means is initially a certain percentage, 5 to 10% had tested positive within the facility. We would go in, work with our partners to test everyone, including staff. That way we would get a better snapshot of what COVID looks like within that facility, the number of people who have been tested positive. That helps the facility and the staff isolate individuals who are sick and then quarantine individuals who may have been exposed. That has been expanded a little bit. So in last week, actually, VDH decided that when one person within a facility tests positive, then that point prevalence survey can be conducted. With support from UVA and the National Guard, I think we've conducted a total of 3 point prevalence surveys so far in the health district, and we'll be conducting another one shortly. It's a tremendous asset to have to be able to bring in partners to do that, particularly for a group that is the most vulnerable and at highest risk. As far as communities, African-American communities, rural communities that don't have access, we'll be using our community site team to go out to those neighborhoods to conduct testing. Working with community leaders, we have already identified a list within Charlottesville and Albemarle that we want to identify and prioritize. And then we'll work with community leaders and partners in the localities to do the same.
Great, thanks. And we have a friend on here online, Jan, who asked, why is Virginia 48th in the country in testing for the virus?
Jan, thank you for your question. I think a lot of why we have struggled to increase our testing is related to capacity, whether that's having the right supplies, the test kits, the swabs used to collect the specimens from the individual, the testing capacity within Virginia, and certainly the protective equipment that individuals need, the N95 masks, the face shields, the gowns. All of these are things that states across the country have had to deal with, and we're no different. And for whatever reason, we've had a difficult time acquiring all the supplies that are needed. What we learned this week is that we're going to begin to see an influx of all of those supplies so that local health districts, private primary care providers, hospitals can conduct more widespread testing, identify those communities that need the testing most, and go out and collect the specimens so that we can determine what the true spread of COVID is.
Great, thank you. And another question that kind of plays off of testing is, will it be open to the general public when the health department has testing events? And how about folks who are asymptomatic, so people who are not experiencing any symptoms at the time?
So to access the testing, what we'll do is a registration process where individuals can contact us through our hotline, and a nurse will ask, or a screener will ask, a number of questions about why the individual wants to get tested. We're really looking for individuals who are symptomatic, who may have had close contact with someone who is confirmed positive with COVID-19. And then we will go through sort of a process of identifying all the information needed to submit into the system. Through that registration process, we will identify a time where that individual can come to a drive-through clinic, go through in about 5 to 10 minutes once they arrive to get the test done. And then we will submit the test for determining whether or not it's positive or negative. It's been about 1 to 2 days for those clinics to get the results back, and then we would communicate the results, positive or negative, back to the individual. If it's positive, we'll conduct the contact tracing and make sure that we're identifying all of those who may have been at risk. We'll provide guidance for isolation and quarantine, depending on the situation. And then over time, we will expand potentially to asymptomatic individuals, particularly those who had direct contact with someone with COVID. These would be individuals maybe with those comorbidities or those health conditions that put them at significant risk, or maybe really close contacts, people who work within the same close area, or maybe it's someone who lives with a partner or a family member that did test positive for COVID-19.
Great, thanks. And I'll ask you just one more testing question and then we'll move on to another topic here. But our friend Carmen asked, can we get testing through our primary care as part of a regular checkup?
Testing through primary care providers depends on the provider themselves. They may have the PPE to do it, the personal protective equipment, and they may have access to the test kits. If so, then it's going to be up to them whether or not they want to test. It's best for individuals to contact their primary care provider ahead of time to see if they have that capacity to do testing, and then if they will do the testing for individuals seeking testing.
That was Ryan McKay and Catherine Goodman of the Thomas Jefferson Health District at a town hall held on Friday, May 8th. Do watch the entire thing if you can. There's a lot of community health information that you probably need to know. You can see a link in the show notes. You're listening to the Charlottesville Quarantine Report, a public service of the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. If this is your first show, thanks for listening. I began this program 8 weeks ago to help myself learn more about community health in a time of a pandemic. And as we've gone, we've heard more about the economic effects of what's happening. But it's also a show where I am looking for people's stories. This next segment is an example of that. School has not been in session for 2 months, but students are still doing work. Sometimes that means incorporating rites of passage in individual and personal assignments, such as asking for permission to change their physical appearance. Later on today, Monday, May 11th, a group of students at Charlottesville High School will shave their heads to raise money for the St. Baldrick's Foundation. That's the charity that raises money for youth who are cancer patients. This effort is being coordinated by 10th grader Meg Gist. She's getting assistance from her teacher, Matt Deegan, who helped with a petition to convince her parents to let her shave her head. Mr. Deegan and Meg spoke last week and were joined by Meg's mother, Steph.
Meg, I'd like you to tell the story, if you don't mind. And I'm just, I don't really know the whole backstory about why you wanted to shave your head and why you decided to make a petition out of that idea, and who you, if you reached out to other teachers and relatives, or so maybe you can kick the story off.
Yeah. So how long has it been? Like a couple months? Maybe?
I'd say so.
Like a couple months ago.
Yeah.
I was kind of looking at like just posts online, and I was kind of thinking about like my personal journey as a person and trying to figure out what I'm going to do during quarantine, because it was like right after quarantine started. Yeah. And I wanted to try something new with my hair, and I was thinking about changing it up, being more expressive with how I wanted my hair to be. And I guess I kind of wanted to try something new and interesting, but I also just like it because like it's very practical, and the style is pretty edgy, I guess. But it's definitely nice, especially now that we're getting into like spring and or what are we in?
We're in spring.
So now as the weather gets warmer, anyway.
Yeah.
It's a legit question.
And also what day is it?
So that's kind of why I wanted to.
Yeah.
And then my petition idea was just because I know a lot of times convincing my parents takes a lot of effort. And I had to come up with a creative method to kind of get them on my side about this. So I thought a petition would really help show them that I would be accepted in the community.
And who else did you send the petition to, Meg?
So I actually asked a lot of people to sign my petition. I asked a bunch of my fellow students, just peers and people in my contacts, I guess. And I asked my teachers. That's how you, Mr. Deegan, found out about it. And I got a lot of positive response from that. And it was really nice to receive that accepting feedback, especially from adults where kind of radical ideas aren't as not like accepted, but they're just not generally talked about. And it was just nice to hear other people's opinions on it that weren't adolescents. So yeah. But
how many signatures did you end up getting on the petition?
I think it was like 28 or something.
That's pretty good.
It was around that. Yeah.
And I think one thing that was a factor too is it was also a variety of people.
Yeah,
I mean, it was teachers, it was, you know, so that helped from my point of view. And it was a good essay, and it was tables. That's what's surprising. It was like pros, cons.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a process of of you just whatever we brought up as a reason to not, you found information to counter it.
Well, yeah. So I actually asked my parents beforehand as well, like what they didn't want me getting a buzz cut for, like the reasons why they didn't want me to get a buzz cut.
Yeah.
And so I took that information and I bulleted it down and I came up with counter arguments to those, which is, as they teach us in school, a good method to creating a persuasive argument. So I just applied.
So it's a future lawyer on our hands, I think.
Your fault, Mr. Deegan. You've taught too well.
So, and that's, I feel like that, especially that time and effort put into my persuasive writing, that was really, that really showed like the amount of thought that I put into this decision. And it kind of showed my maturity as well.
You are your own person and you do need the ability to discover who you are, and you've got to try. And one thing we've always said, the difference between a good haircut and a bad haircut is 2 weeks.
I also did my research and read a couple of blogs about other people and their decisions to shave their head.
I grew up in the Midwest and all girls had long hair.
Yeah.
You know, so it is a really deep thing. And I think, you're taking a risk. There are going to be people that you may get some bad comments, but it was a choice and a decision.
Yeah.
And then people are going to see, you can still. Yeah, because it was interesting too. Like we went through all the negative associations I had with a shaved head, and some of it is skinheads. I mean, my little brain in Charlottesville here, I'm seeing not. But it was basic training. And then this was the huge link that was so sad, is the other link I had in my head was people in chemo. And that wasn't one of these negative, like, skinheads. That was just, it's just a deep, tragic thing. And then finding out, and this was Meg's godmother actually thought of this. She didn't tell, she was like, because she was supporting you without telling me. She was supporting you. And
she didn't have any contact with me either. So she kind of like whole independent thing.
Yeah. So she brought up the foundation. And then the thing, it's a really, really good foundation. And it means so much to the kids that are going through chemo when they see other people doing it, because it's a stigma. I mean, these are deep social things, even for boys, but especially for girls. And so it turns out that's a really, they feel it's helpful for them.
Exactly. Know, that's why we need to break the stereotypes.
And it's also, I mean, it's, you know, and just reading about the foundation too, it's, I mean, we're all, you know, right now is COVID time, but this, people are still struggling. Kids are still struggling.
Yeah, that's
cancer and dealing with that too.
Meg, when you included in your email the idea that you miss the community of Charlottesville, and that really struck a chord with me and made me think of ways we could try to not exactly replicate community, because you can't substitute face-to-face, you know, in a school. There's a certain energy about a school that you just can't replicate, but to try to find something that would build community. And so that's why I, you know, suggested it to you.
Yeah. Especially now, like during this time when we're all kind of separated physically from each other, doing something virtually, and especially something that helps other people. I mean, that we might not even know. It's something that we can all participate in, and it brings this sense of community back together, and it's very positive. It's a very positive thing, and I'm glad I'm participating in it.
And people have been really good at giving too, which is really exciting. I mean, even people your age are really giving, and so that does feel really good right now to be able to do something positive.
I'm just curious, is this something that you would have even thought about before?
Honestly, probably not. I might have considered it, but I probably would have wanted to wait until at least this summer, because I feel like, especially since we are in quarantine, and it wasn't as big of a like risk factor in my head, I guess, because like I really took into consideration how people would react and kind of where I would fit socially. So emailing all my teachers and asking them for like their opinions on it was something that I jumped on probably because of the quarantine and that we were using electrical communication. But I don't know, because like if I had gone to school and thought about it, I probably would have been like, well, how are my classmates going to react and how are my teachers going to react without actually knowing? And mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't have taken the time to communicate beforehand electronically or in person and ask like how other people would feel, because one, I would be concerned about like the consequences after that, like how people would treat me if they knew I was considering possibly shaving my head. And also, if I went through with it, how they would react. So yeah, I feel like definitely quarantine has given me some like confidence in my decision to explore who I am and express myself without dealing with or without risking negative feedback from others.
High school's tough.
High school is tough. Yes.
High school is tough.
Yeah, but like especially since quarantine happened and mm-hmm. I was just communicating with this like small pool of people and I received such positive feedback, I was like, well, the only people who are going to be really seeing me in person or video calling me are these people, and since they're showing positive feedback, I feel comfortable doing this and I feel accepted and welcomed.
And you're not alone, Meg, in that there are some of your classmates that I've talked to, the 10th graders that I teach, who maybe not like this, but it's a change that they feel like they have more control over their school day in a way. And they also feel like, you know, not everyone's an extrovert. And I feel like the way that school is structured sometimes favors extroverts. Yeah. So introverts, and this is not just true in school, it's probably true in the workplace too, where introverts kind of favor this type of meeting rather than, you know, always being in close proximity to each other.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think especially now, like, this is completely unrelated to head shaving, but like I'm considering, next year it may or may not actually happen, but we are still considering leadership for this year or next year, which is like basically just select students who are deciding to take the initiative to step up to these roles of leaders, for certain groups of people. So it's based on like instruments and, just sections of the band basically. And I put my name down for drum major, so if we're still having auditions, I'm possibly going to be drum major. And I think really like the time here at home by myself with my parents, that kind of prompted that self-reflection and evaluation of like, do I want to put myself out there more? And it's especially nice because when we're all lonely, we're like, when I get back to school, I'm going to talk to all these people. Mm-hmm. So it kind of encourages us to think about our social lives and like just the high school social hierarchy and like mm-hmm. how we interact with people. And so I think like I was definitely considering drum major, but trying out for drum major, but I think it's like the saying, you don't know what you have until you lost it, or some variation of that. And it's like, especially when we're isolated, we miss the things like interacting with people and things like leadership opportunities. So, I think that kind of helped boost my confidence and, drive that initiative to try out for drum major and kind of like, encourage those leadership qualities and that kind of just like consideration.
That's awesome, Meg. That is awesome to hear.
Cool. Yeah.
That was Meg and Steph Gist, talking with Charlottesville High School teacher Matt Deegan. They're still looking for donations of support for a head shaving event scheduled to take place later today. And that's another installment of the Charlottesville Quarantine Report for May 11th. If you'd like to tell a story on the program, or have a public service announcement you'd like me to read, or if you want to record one yourself, drop a line to wordcast@gmail.com. I'm Sean Tubbs, and I thank you for listening.